Hey, our ride's almost here. Are you ready?
Just grabbing my shoes.
That's what you said 10 minutes ago.
I just wrapped a video call, uploading this giant file on my tablet, looking at my watch go bananas with the group chat, and, of course, still lining up tonight's playlist on my phone.
All at once?
Yep, story of my life. That's why I switched to T-Mobile. They have the fastest 5G network.
Okay, multitasker. I see you.
Honestly, I never imagined I could do all this at once. It's awesome.
Say no more. I'm totally switching. My post is taking way too long to upload.
That's a sign. You've got to get T-Mobile.
So many reasons to join T-Mobile. Find yours at T-Mobile.com.
Fastest based on analysis by Ookla speed test intelligence data of national speed score results incorporating 5G download and upload speeds for the first half of 2026.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
If you're the type of person who wants data, not assumptions, Prenuvo's whole body scan gives you a deep understanding of your health. Screen for over 500 conditions, including many cancers, autoimmune disorders, neurodegenerative diseases, and more. Add blood panels to test over 80 biomarkers, and you've got information about your body you may never have had before. Book your scan at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Sal Sports and Stuff podcast. It's been a while since I chatted with you. It's been a whole football season, actually. We started doing this last July, had a few guests, rolled into August, and then kind of put it on the shelf for a while. And I apologize for that, but, you know, trying to get some good guests for you. And at the same time, life happens, work happens, football season happens. So now that we're back out of football season, rolling into another one, here we are again. And I've kind of tweaked it. I've decided to do some different things here on the podcast. And one of them is do a little more sportsy stuff and still have some really interesting guests who have interesting stories to share. So I'll kind of do that as we go along. I can't promise you you'll have a podcast every week, maybe two in a week, maybe none for a couple of weeks. We'll see. But whenever one's up, I'll let you know. And I have some ideas going forward to make this really worth your while to come here and listen whenever we have somebody. If you have missed the first three guests, which were during the 2017 calendar year, I really invite you to go and listen. Great feedback on iTunes. I appreciate that at the WGR550.com website as well. The first episode was in late July. It was the inaugural episode. I talked with Joe Lazzito, who was the intended fifth victim of a man named Maxime Gelman, who had already killed four people over a 28-hour killing spree in New York City. He stabbed three of them, ran over another one with a car. Joe was on a train, and he actually wound up stopping him, and he almost lost his life. He's actually a Bills fan. He lives down in New York City area, and it was an incredible, incredible, powerful story. Please go listen to that if you get a chance. That was episode one. Right after that, we had episode two, which was Amilcar Hill. I say his name wrong all the time. Amilcar Hill. I apologize. It's DJ Milk, as you know him. Experienced the tragedy and heartbreak that no parent ever should. In the summer of 2009, he lost his 7-year-old son in a car accident on the New York State Thruway. And, you know, it's just his story about that and how his life has evolved. And a lot of you know him from Bills and Sabres games. So please go listen to that as well. I think it's actually pretty inspirational how, you know, he's kind of lived his life in honor of his son and what they've done since then. And then not as, you know, I guess emotional, but pretty cool stuff. Episode three was Ryan Nobles. Now, Ryan is a White House correspondent, basically, for CNN. He is also a big Buffalo Bills fan. That's why I reached out to him. It was really cool. And we talked a lot about what it was like leading up to the election and covering all that and what goes into covering politics. So all of that is at the Sal Sports and Stuff podcast on iTunes, WGR550.com. And we're here today to do another one with you. And I'm going to get to that in a little while. And I'm going to talk to Pancho Billa. Do you remember Pancho Billa from the draft? If you're a Bills fan, you probably do. He is the man who's battling cancer. He's been battling cancer for a while, going through chemo and radiation. He was at the draft in Dallas. He was part of the Bills' inner circle, as they called it. They brought him up on stage, Andre Reed and Fred Jackson did. They brought him up on stage to announce the Bills' pick, which was Harrison Phillips, and talked with him about his life and about being in that moment up on stage at the draft, all that kind of stuff. So I'll get to that in a little while. It's a very interesting conversation. Recorded that with him, so I'll let you listen to that. But in the meantime, like I said, I want to kind of also do some different things with this podcast. And one of the things is just to kind of catch up a little bit on sports here and give you a few takes. Maybe you don't hear me enough in the morning. You're driving in. You can't listen on Saturdays when I'm on. Whatever it is. Maybe you just want some Buffalo sports talk. I just want to talk about last weekend and what it was like. What a weekend we had in Buffalo sports. Can you imagine and can you think of a better weekend for the two teams combined? At least not, I would say, over the last 20 years, it seems like, the Buffalo Bills and Sabres. Maybe that's hyperbolic because there's probably been some games. I mean, I don't know. Did the Sabres win the weekend that the Bills beat the Patriots in 2011? That might have been a great weekend, right? A big win, something like that. But it was pretty incredible winning the lottery for the Sabres with Rasmus Dahlin. I think we're going with Dahlin. I say Dahlin. I think it's Dahlin. I think it's Dahlin. I don't know. Either way, Rasmus Dahlin, we'll get it from him. And that's going to be the guy they're going to choose. And if you haven't seen highlights of him playing over in Sweden, my gosh, this guy is incredible. This guy, this kid, he's a kid. He's 17 years old. He's going to be 18 years old. People are saying he's the best defenseman to come into the NHL draft in 40 years, going back to 1973 with Denny Potvin. And that would be, what, 45 years ago. And that was the year I was born, 1973. That's how old I am. And Denny Potvin, as you know, was an incredible player with the New York Islanders, a part of their four in a row Stanley Cup teams that they had. You look back, I did some research here. Think about all the defensemen that have been selected number one in that time. Counting Denny Potvin, there have only been 11 defensemen in 45 years selected number one overall. It looks like this will be the 12th. This year when the Sabres select Rasmus Dahlin. And these are names that you know. Aaron Ekblad, Eric Johnson of the Blues, Chris Phillips of the Senators, Brian Berard of the Senators, Ed Jovanovski of the Panthers, Roman Hamrlick of the Lightning, Gord Kluzak going back to 1982. Remember him from some of those Sabres playoff years. He didn't really have a great career, though. I don't exactly know what happened, if it was injuries or not. He's one of the guys that played the fewest. In fact, I think he played the fewest games, now that I look, of all these guys selected number one. Rob Ramage had a really good career. Rick Green with the Capitals in 76. Greg Jolly with the Capitals in 74. Didn't play a ton. And then Potvin, of course. You look at some of the number two overall. Basically, the point here is if you are selecting a defenseman, one, two, or three overall, he's going to be good. I think chances are he's going to be really good. Barry Beck, Dave Babich, Chris Pronger, Wade Redden was on this. Drew Doughty, 2008. Victor Hedman in 2009, all number two overall picks. And the number three, even if you want to go to that, overall picks. You got Scott Niedermeyer on this list. Brad Stewart's here. Jay Bomeister, Cam Barker, looking at something. He didn't play very much. Jack Johnson. So, you know, you got a lot of interesting names. Zach Bogosian's on this list, number three overall in 08 by the Atlanta Thrashers. He's now playing for the Sabres. But, you know, this kid is basically considered a generational type of defenseman. I get so excited when I hear people talk about him because we haven't had a guy like that in Buffalo. I mean, obviously Jack Eichel coming here, but really that you can just point to as the one guy that every single team wanted in the draft, because in the Eichel draft, it was McDavid. You know, Eichel was, I guess, for a better lack of term, the consolation prize, even though he is a terrific, terrific talent and really amongst, I think, one of the best players in the NHL. But you get the point. I mean, this kid, Rasmus Dahlin, there's no team in this league that would not take him number one overall, I think, regardless of what need you have. So go on YouTube, check out some of the highlights of him. It's incredible. Some of the people that have come on WGR in the morning show or afternoon show, they've talked about him, his coach, teammates, people have seen him play in some of these international leagues and games and things like that. Some of the things they have to say about him are pretty incredible, and I'm very excited for this, and I think all Sabres fans should be. And, you know, obviously I think the organization needs it. They need a shot in the arm after the poor season they had last year, the attendance and ticket sales and the way that thing is going right now with, you know, people just not wanting to go to games. And you can basically give away tickets, it seems like, on the secondary market. I know you can, actually, just give away tickets to a lot of people. I've known people who have done that. And then you get to the arena, and pretty much half of it is filled with the opposing team's fans. So hopefully all of that stops, and hopefully This is a young man who this team can really build their defensive core around for many, many years. He can move the puck up to guys like Jack Eichel, Sam Reinhart, who had a really fantastic second half. And this team can go forward and really start playing amongst the playoff contenders again and even going beyond that over the next several years. The Bills, they draft Josh Allen with their first pick, number 7 overall, after trading up from number 12. Now, some of you hated Josh Allen, and some of you are either, well, I wouldn't say, I don't know of anybody who loved Josh Allen. I was never nearly as low on him as so many people, even before the draft. If you listen to me on WGR, I said many times, I think it's unfair, the draft process, what happened to Josh Allen, because there seems to be this, you know, draft online subculture, if you will, that people just seem to latch onto whatever certain people say. And as soon as a few started saying, well, he's inaccurate and he can't hit the broadside of a barn and I wouldn't take him, then everybody seemed to jump on that and say, well, that must be true. If you go back and watch him, and I'm going to be doing some more stuff on this, and I'm going to be putting together some more videos and breakdowns, and I've done a little bit of that so far at my YouTube page. Go find it, Sal Capaccio on YouTube. If you go and find that, you can see where I think he really does struggle with accuracy is when he tries to throw with just his arm. And he probably, here's my guess, Josh Allen is so powerful in his arm. When he was growing up, he didn't have to be really good mechanically. He could basically just throw balls as far as he wanted and fit them into windows wherever he wanted against high school and college level defensive backs with just basically not worrying about his mechanics. And somebody probably along the way didn't take enough time to try and fix those and say, hey, as you get older and as you get to higher levels, you have to do this better and that better. And I think that when you see him do the right, have the right mechanics and step the right way and put his shoulders where it's supposed to be, he's fine. He's just as accurate as anybody, actually. And he throws the hell out of the football. When he breaks down is when he doesn't do that, when he steps flat-footed and tries to throw instead of stepping forward with his arm, with his upper torso and not using his body. And he said that in his introductory press conference in Buffalo. He said when he's off platform, I like the way he said that, when he's off platform with his feet is when he has the most issue. And that's what I've seen as well. Tremaine Edmonds, I didn't think at all the Bills had a shot at this kid. What I thought, though, was that if they didn't take a quarterback, if someone wasn't there at 12, that all the guys were gone and they just missed out, that maybe he was a guy that they would target and he would be there at 12 and he'd be a good pick. Well, guess what? They get him at 16 after trading up from 22. That was a really nice trade for this team, I think, to get up there, grab this kid. He's going to be, I think, a star in this league. He's going to be a force in the middle of their defense for many years. It's documented. He's only 19. I think he turned 20, actually, now that I do this podcast this week. He's 20 years old. He's going to be a young player with a really, really bright future ahead of him. Comes from great bloodlines. His dad played for the Miami Dolphins, Farrell Edmonds, for many years. His brother got drafted in the first round by the Steelers. First time that's ever happened. Two brothers go in the same first round of the draft. He had another brother who actually, kind of a funny story, his other brother who went to Virginia Tech was Bruce Smith's son's roommate at Virginia Tech. So you got Farrell, who played against Bruce in those glory years, heyday years, the Bills-Dolphins rivalry. Then you had Farrell's son and Bruce Smith's son, who were roommates at Virginia Tech together, and now Farrell's other son is going to be playing for the Buffalo Bills. So life kind of comes full circle. Harrison Phillips, I think he'll go right into the defensive line rotation for the Bills. People think he's the next Kyle Williams. Maybe. I think that's pretty high praise. I think that's also a pretty unfair comparison for him right away, but this is a guy that I know that the Bills really like. Sean McDermott, the wrestling background we know, and it does matter, I think, if you are a guy that plays multiple sports, and especially a sport like wrestling for your linemen. It helps your feet, helps your base, your strength, down low, your core. Really, I think this is a guy that's going to come in and be a part of this defense, but not someone that you're going to be getting a ton of snaps from, 75% of the snaps. They just don't do that in Buffalo. Sean McDermott rotates, you know, his defensive line, and you're going to get guys that get 30 to 40 snaps percentage-wise, and that's about what he will probably get his rookie year. I wrote about this, WGR550.com. Go check it out. My expectations for all of the Bills rookies in the 2018 class. All right, so like I said, I got a lot planned here for the podcast, how we want to morph this thing and things I want to do with it. I got some other really cool things planned for my Bills coverage for all of you this year, so stay tuned to that. Follow me on Twitter, at Sal Sports, WGR550.com. Hope you subscribe to the podcast. Please do so. I'm going to take you to my latest interview. It is with Pancho Villa, whose real name is Ezra Castro. He's battling cancer, going through chemotherapy, radiation. He was up on stage in Dallas to announce the Bills' third round pick of the 2018 NFL Draft. Ezra, first of all, thank you very much for joining me here on the Sal Sports and Stuff podcast. It's my pleasure to have you.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Where are you right now? Where do you live and where are you right now?
So I currently live in Dallas, Texas. I've been here for about 17 years, originally from El Paso, Texas, and moved over here to Dallas to finish school, and never been back to El Paso to live. Made this my home.
So you grew up down there. You've lived down in that area basically your entire life?
My whole life. I've been a Texan my whole life, born and raised. No relationship to New York, Buffalo. As a matter of fact, when I chose the Bills to be my team, I remember my dad asking me, "Do you even know where New York is?" And I said, "No, and I don't care. I chose the Bills, and that's what I want to follow."
That's funny. So tell me about that. How did you wind up choosing the Bills to be your team?
So when I was about 7 years old, I was playing Pee Wee football. My dad had put me to start playing football, and I remember the drive home one day, and he said, "You know, you really should start rooting for a team so that you can learn the game, follow your position." And my dad's a huge Dallas Cowboy fan, and he really was pushing the America's team on me. And I said, "Look, Dad," I was like, "I see the Mexican flag every day because I grew up about 100 yards from the Mexican border." And I said, "Is there a team that has a red, white, and green?" And he said, "No, there's no such team with those colors." And I was like, "Okay, well, what about the American flag?" And he said, "Well, you got the Patriots, you got the Bills." And I was like, "Yeah, the Bills. I like the Bills. I like that charging logo." He said, "Are you sure?" And I was like, "That's what I want. I want the Buffalo Bills." He goes, "You don't want to be a Cowboy fan?" I said, no way do I want to be a Cowboy fan." So I chose the Bills because of the logo over the Patriots logo. And been a fan since 1986, right before Jim Kelly, you know, came on board with the team. So I've been rooting for them since.
How old are you, can I ask?
Sure, I'm 38 years old. Actually, my birthday's on May 31st. I'll be turning 39. Yeah.
You know, what's cool to me about that story is, you know, I have a 4-year-old son, and, you know, in our house, it's Buffalo sports. He roots for Buffalo sports because he grew up here, but I'm also a Yankees fan. So he's a Yankees fan. But if he chose to root for another team, I you know, people say, "Well, you can't let him root for the Red Sox or whatever." And I'm like, "Well, if that's what he chooses, that's what he chooses." What's cool to me about your story is your dad gave you that freedom. As big of a Cowboys fan as he was, he's like, "Son, you pave your own way and do what you want to do."
Exactly. He said, "You know, you got to choose a team." And I'm so glad he gave me that opportunity to choose a team. I will add, I'm the third son of four. So his first son, my oldest brother, he was pretty much screwed. He was a Cowboy fan. But the second, third, and fourth ones, he sort of let us like, "Hey, whatever you all want to do, you know, choose a team. Let's follow them, support them. You can't give up on them, win or lose." And so my other two brothers are Bronco fans, and I'm the only Bills fan in the family. But I think my dad has a second favorite team now after this weekend. He's always appreciated, you know, my fanship to the Bills, and this just iced it for him. And he's a huge, you know, second Buffalo Bills fan now for him, for sure.
We'll definitely talk about that weekend and how everything went for you. I do want to ask you, what's it like when the Bills play the Broncos or the Bills play the Cowboys in your house?
Oh man, it is so crazy. You know, such a huge rivalry within our family, especially back in the 90s when the Super Bowls, when the Cowboys were playing the Bills. I still remember I wouldn't talk to my brother for the whole week during that week. I mean, we all had our own separate rooms. And it was like, "You stay in your room, I'll stay in mine. You know, Jim Kelly's going to, you know, throw 10 touchdowns. Bruce Smith's going to get at Troy Aikman." And gosh, that was such a huge rivalry. And even today, after the Bills finish playing, I usually end up with my brother just to watch the Cowboys lose and go root against them. And he loves it, though. He loves, you know, me showing up at the bar with him if the Cowboys are away and rooting against them. And as far as the Broncos, it's not too bad. You know, we're in the same conference, but we do travel to Denver when the Bills are visiting there. to watch that game. And, you know, it's just back and forth, you know, Von Miller is going to get to so-and-so and blah, blah, blah. And it's such a strong brotherhood of that the NFL has made us even stronger, giving us that extra passion and that extra love for each other. We're really tight knit about our teams. And when they play each other, it's you know, back and forth text messages throughout the week. You know, so-and-so's injured. Oh, we can't wait to do this to you guys now. And, you know, we're going to get you here, blah, blah, blah. It's so fun. And I love my brothers to death. I really wouldn't be a fan of the NFL if it wasn't for them and our upbringing with the sport.
Well, tell me a little bit about your family. Tell me about mom and dad and growing up and what they did and just your life growing up and becoming a young child to an adult.
I grew up, like I said, I grew up in El Paso, literally about 100 yards from the Mexican border. We had the biggest house in the neighborhood. It was a two-story house. And my mom was a registered nurse as I was growing up. My dad worked for the El Paso Electric Company for over 30 years. You know, middle-class family, just bringing up four boys.
When you say you had the biggest house, is that because you had more means? Like, were your parents more well-off maybe than other people in the neighborhood, or just because you needed more space?
Well, because of both. Because of both. You know, my mom being an RN, one of the main nurses in the big hospitals in El Paso, working two jobs to support four growing boys. Can you imagine? We had two refrigerators and two freezers in our house. And she worked two jobs. And my parents were divorced. So my dad was real supportive of when my mom wasn't there, my dad was there helping her out at the house and bringing us more food. But yeah, four boys. And we all grew up. We were raised Mormon, which is a fact that a lot of people don't know about Pancho Villa. I was raised Mormon, and, you know, we had a good church upbringing, a strong family of faith. And to this day, I still practice the faith. It's a blessing that our parents did that to us, because everybody needs to have some type of faith to fall back on. And then, you know, as the years grew by, the four boys, we started departing the home slowly. And I've got two brothers who are in the Dallas Police Department. And myself, I'm a practicing mortician here in Dallas.
Wow.
And my younger brother is a veterinarian here in Dallas.
What are the ages of your brothers?
It's a good question. I believe my oldest is 45, and then 45, 43, and I'll be 39, and then 37. So it's, you know, we're separated each other by 2 years, and then there's a 3 year gap, and then me and my younger brother are 2 years apart. But it was like the perfect age. We all grew up together. I mean, the youngest was, you know, say 10 years old. The oldest was about 16. So we all grew up pretty much, you know, outside back in the 80s and 90s. Kids were able to play outside. And
did you all play sports?
Such a fun time playing football at the time. Actually, believe it or not, I was the only one that played football of all four of us. My two older brothers were too much of into the heavy metal era, you know, 80s and 90s. Yeah, long hair, tight jeans.
What were their bands of choice here? What do we got? Poison, Iron Maiden, late. Van Halen.
Yeah, Van Halen, Cinderella, Motley Crue.
There you go.
And then, you know, I came to Sepultura, Slayer, and the hardcore heavy metal came in. And of course there I was too, following the bands, because my older brothers are jamming in their room as loud as they can be on the radio. And so I picked it up too, but yeah, I was the only one that played sports, through the school years. You know, every parent puts their child in soccer and baseball when they're 3, 4, 5 years old, but that actually carried it on and continued, playing football. I was the only one that played through my high school year. And played offensive line center. So I loved Eric Wood on the team. And that was a position my dad said, you got to learn that position. You got to follow it. And sure enough, throughout my high school year, I was a center. I was long snapper. I was field goal snapper. And, you know, I was the front man calling the defense and saying, watch for this linebacker, watch for this. You know, they're coming your way over there. And that was fun. That was fun playing on the offensive line.
Did you play any other sports besides football?
Dirty work. I did track and field. I did shot put and discus. That's about it.
So you're a pretty strong guy. That, I mean, what are you, when you were in high school, like how big were you, height-wise, weight-wise?
Oh, I'm 5'7", and in high school I topped off at about 290.
Mm.
So I was pretty, you know, as Mexicans, we're small and we're stout the wrong way. we grow the wrong way. Yeah, and so I was a small lineman at 5'7". I mean, I was pretty small compared to the guards and the tackles on the offensive line. But I was so quick. That's what God blessed me with, is I was so quick to able to, you know, snap the ball, pitch off the nose tackle, pick up a linebacker. And so we always ran off the one and zero holes straight up the middle. I mean, we just did such a great job with it. And proud to say that I was class of 97 in my high school, and we brought the first district championship to our high school.
That's awesome.
Riverside High School. Yeah, my senior year, and that was a monumental moment for the high school, because high school's been around for years, and they never won a district championship until when my class was in 97.
Did you?
Cool.
You probably knew. I mean, you weren't going to go out and play college football at your size. You know what I mean? I mean, not many.
Oh yeah,
recruiting 5'7" centers out there, but you know, you kind of you didn't have any aspirations of that, or what?
No, I didn't. I knew I'd. There was no way at my height. I said, there's no way I'm ever going to play college football. So I knew the last game of the season. Well, we were actually in the playoffs, the area district champion playoffs. And I knew, I was like, this could be my last game ever played. And sure enough, it was. And I didn't have the aspiration, the inspiration to go play college ball or anything. I said, no, there's more to me than playing college ball. And I didn't want to change positions or anything like that. So I said, there's no way. And we played a playoff game. We played a city called Andrews here in Texas. Our smallest guy on the roster, on our team roster, was their biggest, their smallest guy.
Your biggest guy was their smallest guy.
Right, exactly, on the team. So, I mean, we just got, we got plastered. Yeah, there was no way. So, and our tallest guy didn't even start. He was our punter.
That's funny. I know the way that Texas football can be, for sure. Everything's a little bit,
exactly,
a little bit bigger and a little bit more intense. So what'd you do? By the way, we're speaking with Ezra Castro. You know him on Twitter and online as Pancho Billa. You remember him from the NFL draft, announcing one of the Bills draft picks with Andre Reed and Fred Jackson. We'll get to that in a little while. I want to talk about, after your high school years, you're growing into a man. Did you go to college? Did you just go right into the workforce? Kind of take me through those years leading up to, maybe your adult life.
Yes, sir. So after college, I hung out for a summer or two, and I was.
So you did go to college?
Lower 20s. And I did. I went to Paso Community College, took some basic courses. I wasn't sure what I still wanted to do. I did actually want to go into radio, but I was unsure about it. And, the parting days were just catching up to me. I lost all my muscle mass from high school. I gained weight up to about almost 310. Yeah. Fall just a big old blob. And I finally decided, I said, I got to do something. I went to a wedding one day, and I spoke to a gentleman that was sitting next to me, and he was a mortician. And I spoke to him through the whole wedding. I missed the whole dance, the whole cake, everything. I ended up enrolling into mortuary school, and it was in Dallas. And my brother was already here as a police officer. And I called him up at 3 a.m. and I said, hey, do you know where this street is and this school? And he said, yeah, that's like in the worst area of Dallas. What do you want to do there? And I said, well, there's a mortuary school. And he said, oh, really? I was like, yeah. So I ended up enrolling that night, and 2 months later, I was in mortuary school.
Wow.
Moved to Dallas, and been practicing mortuary for, I've been working at a funeral home for the last 16 years. I'll have a 16-year anniversary coming up in July.
That's amazing.
I had to get out of El Paso in order to finish college, get some type of a degree, because I was just partying. And believe it or not, Pancho doesn't drink. I don't drink, I don't smoke, don't do drugs. But I was just out all the time, just not focused on life and what I wanted to do. I was getting ready to turn into my 20s. And I said, man, the only way I'm going to finish and do something here is if I leave El Paso and come back with a degree of something. And just never made it back home. Ended up staying here because I am bilingual. And in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, there's, you know, that's a huge plus. And started working at a funeral home in Irving, Texas, and been there 16 years.
Mortuary school, being a mortician, not necessarily the job you think of, dream of when you're a kid, but you seem to have a passion for it.
No.
Pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. Just it's the greatest feeling in the world to be able to help families at the worst time of need. I mean, I've seen some of the worst situations, and you could probably imagine. And I mean, death has no age. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can't schedule death. And it's humbling. It's always humbling to help families and at the worst time of need. And that hug at the end of the funeral, you know, is always it's an emotional rush for me to just get that hug and know that everything went fine and their loved one is resting at peace now and the family's okay and they're happy the way things, the event went. And it's just a humbling career, and I'm back at it, believe it or not. I'm still working through chemo treatments and radiation, and I work when I can. I have a great boss who's given me that blessing to be able to continue working through my treatments.
Are you married?
Being a mortician is just humbling. No, I have a girlfriend. She's Pancho Villa's number one supporter. And believe it or not, Sal, she is a Dallas Cowboy fan. Can you believe that?
Oh, my gosh. That's got
she's a Dallas. Yeah.
That's okay. Okay. She's as much as, you know, your dad like gave you the freedom, you know that that's what it's got to be, right?
Oh, yeah. And she knows. I have two kids. I have Panchito. His real name's Ginobili, like the first player.
Okay.
And my daughter, Lourdes. We call her Lulu. She's 2 years old. So we're a live-in family. We live together, and that's been such a blessing. But, yeah, she supports Pancho Villa to the max. I mean, I couldn't attend away games if she didn't give me the go, and my boss as well. But no, she loves Pancho Villa. She says, go do your thing. No, there's no questions asked. You know, she loves her Cowboys. And everyone tells me, you ought to just convert her to a Bills fan. And I said, you know, I met her as a Cowboy fan. She's got to stick to her roots and just let her, I'm going to let her be a Cowboy fan. And but she loves going with me to the Bills backers here in Dallas. She loves going, and everybody loves her there. And she wears her gear, and she cheers when we score. And she's just been great. She's a loving mother, a loving girlfriend. I mean, she's been to every chemo treatment with me, every doctor's appointment. I couldn't have asked for a better girlfriend in my life.
So your kids are how old, too, is your daughter?
Actually, Panchito just turned six on May 1st. Wow. He just turned six. And my daughter is 2.5 years old. She'll turn 3 in October. And, of course, they're Bills fans. There's no question about it.
I mean, there you go.
They've been listening to the shout song since they were about 6 weeks in the womb.
That's funny.
When she found out she was pregnant. Yeah, they listened to the shout song quite a bit in the womb, especially when mom was asleep and she didn't know I was playing the phone on her belly. They were listening to it, and they are the biggest Bills fans. I mean, they're the future of Bills Mafia, and my son just loves the Bills to the max. And my daughter's picking it up now, too. She's saying, let's go Buffalo. And I'll play the shout song for her every day. And she dances around. And I know I should give him a choice, but I just can't. It's like, well, it's my first son. He's an automatic Bills fan. And it's a girl, the second one. So she's an automatic Bills fan. And no more kids. This is it. We're done.
I hear you. My son, so Max, the same way. He loves the shout song. He loves playing. He loves the Sabres goal song. So they're kids. It's so fun watching them in that experience.
Oh.
And, you know, they're just so innocent. They love it. They get into it. It's so cute. I want to, obviously, because of, you know, your kids being so young, this is obviously a tough time that you're going through, especially for them, I'm sure. But tell me about when you first found out that you had cancer, mm-hmm. and what that was like, and, you know, kind of walk us through, you know, how you told the family and things like that.
Yes, sir. So back last year when I was in Atlanta, I was there for the Bills game. I thought I had like a bulging disc. issue, and my left arm was going numb, felt weird, and of course, being the man guy that I think I am, you know, taking the pain, I ignored it up until when I was in New York for the Thursday night game for the Bills and Jets game, and I was at the Statue of Liberty, and my whole left hand just went completely numb. I mean, it was painful, it was numbing, tingling, and I almost went to a hospital in New York and took some medicine there at the Statue of Liberty. It went away. I promised my girlfriend, I said, I will go to the doctor when we get home. And we got home, went to the doctors, and he ordered an MRI. And within 24 hours, I had the result. And my family physician called me back into his office and gave me the worst news. It was on November 10th when he gave me the worst news of my life that, you know, this could possibly be derived from cancer. I had a mass sitting on my vertebrae, on my C7 and my T1 on the vertebrae. And I was like, man, a mass? Like, what do you mean a mass? A tumor? And he said, we don't know what kind of mass. It could be an infection. We need to send you to a specialist so that you can get it further tested and looked at. But he did tell me this possibly could be derived from cancer. Put me on some strong painkillers, nerve helpers and stuff like that. I've got so much medicine going on. And anyway, I ended up seeing a specialist, and he ordered a PET scan and a CT scan and came back with the news that, you know, hey, this issue is not only in your spine. There's several other places in your body where we're finding the same type of mass. So I was diagnosed in November with metastatic adenocarcinoma, biliary pancreatic cancer. Jeez. And I was like, boy, that's a mouthful. the scary word in there, obviously, is adenocarcinoma. It's a blood cell, cancer cell, and obviously it has spread throughout my body. So they consider it a stage 4. I've got lesions on my liver, lungs, lymph nodes, and I had surgery to remove the mass on my spine on December 13th because they were really concerned that mass was pushing so much on my nerve and my bone, and it had caused a fracture on my C7 spine. And they were concerned if that fractured completely, that it could hit my spinal cord and I could easily just become a quadriplegic in an instant. I could be walking and just crack, or someone hit me on the back real bad. So I had surgery for that. They removed it. They obviously got a biopsy while they were in there, and they 100% completely confirmed the cancer at that point. And it was full recovery mode from then on to about late January when I started chemotherapy. I couldn't start chemo any sooner. They really wanted that bone to heal. I got two bones replaced in the vertebrae. They really wanted that bone to heal before chemo would make it even worse and not let it heal correctly. And I've done 6 sessions of chemo. I've done 10 days of radiation. I'll have my 7th session of chemo this coming Monday, May 7th. And I'll talk to my doctor again. Haven't seen him in about 3 weeks. They've done some blood work and all that. So I'm hoping that, you know, he's got good results and maybe I could take a break, or if he says, let's continue, I'll continue, or plan B. I'm pretty much at the mercy of him, and I trust him. God placed him in front of me. So I got to trust what he says.
So this is
pretty much the gist of it.
There's a possibility that this could be, you could completely recover and be cancer free. You know, I mean, what is the prognosis here?
Well, no, I'm going to be honest. The doctor said there's with this specific type of cell, cancer cell, there's no remission.
Okay.
It's an ongoing, especially because it's metastasized. It's an ongoing cancer that's constantly going to, it can, tomorrow I could do a scan and it can be all of a sudden in my kidney, or it could be in my stomach. It could be in my esophagus. It's just traveling everywhere. And the fact that it's made its way to my spine, the doctor is really concerned. I mean, something that started in your gastrointestinal tract shouldn't have ever ended up on your spine. And which makes sense to me. I'm like, yeah, that's like on the opposite side of my body. but yeah, there's no remission. Obviously there's no cure for cancers. it's pretty much going to be, you know, like the doctor said, you're going to be on some type of treatment for the rest of your life. And, you know, can only give you so many years of it, because obviously the chemo medicine takes a toll on your body. But it's like I told the doctor, you know, doc, those are statistics, those are numbers. You're doing your job. You're telling me what you have to tell me, and I appreciate it. But, you know, I'm just going to live it one day at a time and tackle it one day at a time. And whatever you tell me to do, I'll just do it. And as long as I'm here, I'm here, and I'm going to live life to the fullest, and there's nothing's going to stop me. And I proved it at the NFL draft last week. I mean, I literally got unplugged on Wednesday, and I had about 30 hours to recoup to be at the draft for round one. And I ate the right food, stayed hydrated, got up and walked around. I didn't just lounge at the home on the bed, on the couch. I stayed active while I was on chemo, keep that blood flow going. And I was able to be at the draft all 3 days and have a party for my son on Sunday for Panchito, a huge party for him. So all the prayers that everybody's been saying for me, I mean, they're really shining through. And that's a good example of how prayer works right there.
A lot of people probably listening to this right now, you know, maybe either have a similar story, or maybe and hopefully they don't have to go through something like this. But if they do, they can maybe reflect upon what you're going to say. How did you talk to your kids about this?
Well, I prayed about it, and I said, you know, does a five-year-old need to be introduced to the word cancer unless he's diagnosed with it? And I'll be honest, Panchito doesn't know that I'm diagnosed with cancer at the moment. Obviously, my two-year-old, I mean, she's barely blabbing, you know, buffalo. Right. So there's no way to talk to her about it. But my son knows, obviously, I had surgery on my neck, and he knows Dad's neck is still healing. I watched one of the Bills games with him in the hospital. So he came out and he knew I was in the hospital and I'm visiting the doctor. And a five-year-old, you know, it goes to a doctor, as you probably know, you know, the doctor's going to help you. So he knows the doctor's helping me at this point. And he says, when you go to the doctor again, Dad, because I want to start wrestling with you again and do all the things we used to do, go outside and throw the football and things like that. And I'm slowly progressing, you know, to doing that with him again. But as far as he knows, just that, you know, Dad had neck surgery, you got to be careful with Dad's neck. Now my daughter, gosh, she's such an inspiration, because when I'm on chemo at home for 2 days, she's here with me, with my mom. And I hope that one day I'm here to be able to tell her that she's the one that's kept me going through chemo, because she's bugging me at 6 a.m, you know, Dad, you know, TV. And she just makes me chase her around the house, gets me to go outside and breathe some fresh air. It's almost like she was God sent and is pushing me through those 2 days at home with her energy. I mean, she's nonstop, and obviously Dad's home, so she's excited and watching cartoons with her and chasing her and, you know, playing tea and dolls with her. And I hope I'm around to tell her one day that, you know, you really kept me going through chemo. And it sort of reflects back on my mom being an RN, how she cared for others when they were sick. It's almost like my daughter, Lulu, is doing that for me now.
Right.
You know, that's the way I'm seeing it. Like, she's caring for me when I'm here at home sick. And it's weird because she has found my port. I have an IV port that was placed in my right chest for chemotherapy. And she knows it's there, and she's always tapping it. She lay in bed with me, and she's always tapping it. Like, what is this, Dad? I know this is something. Why don't I have one? And it's so touching to feel that connection with her, that, you know, she knows something's inside of her dad, but she just can't grasp it because of her age. Mm-hmm. But gosh, I mean, she's an energized bunny. She just keeps me going. What else can I say about it? But yeah. And my son, you know, like I said, he doesn't know yet. I just can't tell a 6-year-old now. I can't, and tell him that C word, unless he was in that situation, I don't think he would grasp it and understand what's going on at this point.
Totally respect that. Absolutely. So let's transition to something a little more positive, and that's your experience at the draft. You became a national star that really captured the hearts of a lot of people, a lot of emotion. I know that I was in the Bills media room, and I have to be honest with you, in front of my colleagues, I had tears in my eyes, and I was watching that. It was pretty amazing what they did, and it really kind of, they talked about you. Brandon Bean talked about you, and Sean McDermott talked about you when they met with the media. They mentioned how much that's the culture they're trying to build. They mentioned you by name, Pancho Villa, and you know what it meant to see you up there. So, you know, you're very well known here in Buffalo now, and even if people didn't really know your story, and hopefully this podcast helps them share that story, but how did the Bills reach out to you and get you to be a part of their inner circle?
Well, back in February, I got a call from a gentleman who helps run the Bills backers, Nico. And I was asleep, I'll be honest, when he called. But when I saw a 716 area code number, I mean, I jumped out of bed.
Right.
I said, uh-oh, I got to get this. And back in February, I mean, nobody, not even in Dallas, anybody knew what the whole draft, how to get tickets, things like that. Nothing had really broke out. And Nico called me and said, you know, hey, Pancho, we want to offer, you know, what's supposed to be an inner circle experience where the fans sit on the field. And we want to offer them to you to share with the DFW Bills backers. And I was like, man, this is great. I mean, I've been waiting for ticket sales and stuff like that. And I mean, I didn't hesitate. I was like, I'm on it. What do you need me to do? And he said, well, you got 3 days to get me a list of 50 names.
Huh.
And I was like, 3 days? I was like, geez, thanks for the heads up. And I said, okay, well, no, consider it done. I mean, he caught me on a non-chemo week, so I had the whole week. And I said, I will, give me a day or two, and I'll reach back out to you with the names. And sure enough, you know, me and my vice president, Mike Cipriani, we did a phone conference, and we said, hey, how can we approach this? And we came up with a game plan, and we gave out tickets to those who have been with the fan club the longest, who always are contributing, helping us with, you know, just make the club a success. And then we also wanted the club involved, so we did a mini lottery as well, and names in the bowl, and we drew names, and hey, you're the lucky winner. You're going to be able to go to the draft with us. So we thought that was the best route to take. But that's how they reached out to me, and I got the list to them on time, and they did a good job in staying in touch with me as soon as we hear from the NFL, any other details, we'll get back to you and things like that. Nothing was ever mentioned about me going on stage at this point, ever. It was a no. It's not going to happen, Pancho. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. You know, the inner circle is plenty, and you giving us this opportunity is going to be awesome. And we just rolled with it. I had a great time.
So you had no idea that Fred and Andre would welcome you up on stage?
No idea. No idea at all.
What was that moment like when they said that?
I still get teary-eyed and speechless. Oh gosh, it was like, I tell my girlfriend, there has to be a new word invented for the emotion I felt. Cause it was so, I mean, just so energized and so, you know, does the energizer bunny cry? It was like that kind of a emotion, you know, you're so pumped up because the Bills are on the clock and two legends are on the podium and they're talking about you and they want you to join them. It's like, man, like this is happening. And I'll just fill with so much emotion and excitement. So I can't tell you if I walked, if I got floated, or I got mosh pit carried to the stage. I really can't. I don't remember actually getting to the stage. I remember the final two steps, actually walking up there, and it was a reality. It was like, I'm here. I'm in front of all these people. And there's so much emotion and things going through my head, like, oh my gosh, am I going to be able to announce this pick? Let's take a picture. I'm holding a jersey. What does the jersey say? I'm trying to, you know, just point out to my girlfriend, all the Bills backers that are there cheering me on. It was just such a huge emotional feeling that I still get chills just even trying to describe it. Like I said, there's got to be a new word, and I haven't found the exact word for it, of emotion that I just felt through the whole thing. And anyway, it happened so quick too. Before I knew it, I was walking back down.
Did you have to give the card back?
I was
back?
A little nervous. No, I have the card.
Yeah, I figured that might happen. That's cool.
Yeah, I kept the card. And again, filled with so emotion, I forgot to get Roger Goodell to sign it. So I've been on the phone these last couple of days trying to get through the NFL saying, hey, can I overnight this to you to have him sign it? And no one's calling me back.
You know what you really need? You need Harrison Phillips to sign it.
Yes, I believe it or not, Harrison Phillips, who, by the way, I announced the pick, and I didn't realize until about an hour and a half afterwards who we drafted. I mean,
right?
I read the name, and I mean, there's just so much stuff going on that I was like, who did we draft? You know, and they told me the next Kyle Williams. And I was like, oh, really? I was like, wow, what's his name? And they're like, well, read your card. But no, he's actually, he reached out to me on Twitter and said that it was an amazing experience for him to, you know, to see it. And he wished me well and said he'd be praying for me and hopes to meet me soon. So I hope to God I'm at the home opener. And, you know, I come across him somehow and I'm able to have him sign the card or the jersey. The draft jersey would be awesome, too. But yeah, I do have both. I kept that card in my hand. I didn't want to let go of it. I didn't want anyone to take it from me.
And you do get up to Buffalo then every year, I guess, for a game or two. What?
Oh, yes, sir. For sure. This will be my 11th straight home opener this coming year, God willing. And as much as I love going to Buffalo because of the food, the atmosphere, meeting fans there, just walking the malls and, you know, walking downtown, I love it. I love going to away games because I love meeting fans that travel to see the Bills at away games. I love it too.
You know, you've seen me out there.
Yeah,
we've seen each other. And, it's great when I walk around the sidelines. You know, people who know me from radio or TV, they'll shout my name. I love going over and saying hi, as you and I have before. And it's amazing. I agree with you. It's incredible the number of people you meet that are Bills fans around the country that go to these away games from all other cities, too.
Right, exactly. I mean, I've met people from Italy, from Ecuador. I have a huge following in Mexico. And the Bills Mafia Mexico, they travel. They international travel to these games. Obviously, I mean, from all over the states, these people travel to these games, and I just love meeting the fans from everywhere. I mean, when you go to Buffalo, yeah, you know, I've got my buddies there, and I hang out with them, and, you know, the meeting the people, you have to walk the tailgating and stuff, which I love doing too. But when you go to these away games, you're meeting people from all over the world that have traveled to watch this one game. And you hear their story about how they became Bills fans and why they travel and things like that. That just gives me a rush, and I enjoy doing that. So I try to make it to Buffalo at least twice a year if I can, but mostly, you know, the away games is what I aim for that reason. And I only got 7 more stadiums to knock out before I've completed my journey at every visiting city. And that's a goal of mine, is to make every stadium, and I'll be at Indianapolis this year too, God willing, because that's the only stadium I haven't been to in this coming year's schedule.
Have you been to the new one in Minnesota?
I went to the old Minnesota Dome. And so I know there's a huge debate between me and my brothers because we always talk football. They're like, well, you have to go back to Minnesota now. You have to go back to San Francisco now because they're new stadiums. And I'm like, but I've already seen the Bills play that team. You know, that's the way I'm seeing it. Like, I've already been there. I knock out all the stadiums, I'll go to the new stadiums that are building, you know, the new corporate stadiums that are coming around. You know, nothing like New Era Field, man. Still traditional football, outdoors, you know, bleachers. I love the fact we still have bleachers. You know, all these new stadiums are too cushiony for me. It's not football, you know.
I totally get it.
The seats are too nice.
Well, Ezra, listen, all of Bills Mafia, Bills fans, Western New York, we're all pulling for you, yeah. But I think the entire country is after the draft. You know, you really captured the spirit of what just pulling for your fellow human and helping one another is all about. And, you know, your story you just shared here is equally incredible about your life. And I hope that people, you know, really take it to heart and pay attention, because you have a true story to share, and you have a great family, and we're all pulling for you, man. I know you're going to be great and, you know, come through on this thing totally with a great bill of health.
Yes, sir. I appreciate it. All I ask is for people to just keep praying for me and my family and my children. They got this GoFundMe for me and all that. And
yeah, tell me about that. Where can we find that? What can we do there?
Yeah, Katie O'Brien, the Bills backers president from Houston, she just said, I'm starting a GoFundMe for you. And so, and it's blown up. And I told her, Katie, I need prayers. That's what I need. It's not the money. I need prayers. And she said, well, I'm still starting it for you. Hmm. And so that's blown up. But yeah, it's the GoFundMe, Poncho Power. You can find it under that. And then, there's just so many people to thank, you know, obviously Bills Mafia. They're the ones that, started this huge trend for me. The Red Pinto tailgate, they've been involved with me, all the backers around the world. I mean, and I'm talking backers, like I said, from Ecuador. There's Bills backers, Ecuador. Who would have ever thought?
Right. No kidding. You know? That's crazy.
They're praying for me. And of course, the Bills organization, they've been so great. And I don't know how I'll ever repay the Buffalo Bills and the city of Buffalo for what they've done for me. For a guy from Texas, no relationship to New York, you know? I mean, who would have ever thought, right?
No kidding. It's incredible. Yeah, it's incredible. And by the way, your gear, your getup is amazing. It really is. I mean, we didn't even talk about where you got all that stuff from and how you came about it.
Let's just say it fell off a truck the southern side of the world.
It's amazing. It really is. You are you look like a superhero in there. You know, if my son looked at that, he'd think that you were in a Marvel movie or something.
A Marvel movie, yeah. Well, I try to make it like that, you know, Pancho Villa, the Mexican general, and you know, just add a little twist to it, obviously, and some logos. But that's why I said it. The name worked out perfect with the outfit I was creating, and I'm not adding no more because it takes me about 20 minutes to get ready, just to, you know, in the parking lot to, you know, obviously I can't drive with that stuff on. So I'm there in the parking lot getting ready for about 20 minutes. And I'm like, I'm not adding no more stuff to this outfit. This is it. This is the final version.
Well, listen, so, I want everybody to go follow you on Twitter. It's at PanchoBilla1. That's PanchoBilla.
Yes.
One, and the number one. We want to use the hashtag Pancho Power when you want to tweet at him or help out Pancho Billa in his fight here against cancer. And we're going to rig this thing for him. We're going to help go to the GoFundMe page. Like you said, it's Pancho Power at the GoFundMe page. So let's do whatever we can to help Pancho out. And whether you're a Bills fan or not, you know, I think we should just do whatever we can to help our fellow humans, and especially with that beautiful family you have. Thanks for doing this today. You know, good luck. We'll definitely see each other this football season. I promise, man.
Yes. Yes, sir. I promise I'll do everything I can to be there. I guarantee it. For sure.
Hope you enjoyed all that from Ezra Castro, Pancho Billa. I appreciate him joining me and you for joining me here on the Sal Sports and Stuff podcast. Please click the subscribe button at iTunes. Also go to WGR550.com. You can download, you can listen right from there. And I'll talk to you next time on the Sal Sports and Stuff podcast.
Hey, our ride's almost here. Are you ready?
Just grabbing my shoes.
That's what you said 10 minutes ago.
I just wrapped a video call, uploading this giant file on my tablet, looking at my watch go bananas with the group chat, and, of course, still lining up tonight's playlist on my phone.
All at once?
Yep, story of my life. That's why I switched to T-Mobile. They have the fastest 5G network.
Okay, multitasker. I see you.
Honestly, I never imagined I could do all this at once. It's awesome.
Say no more. I'm totally switching. My post is taking way too long to upload.
That's a sign. You've got to get T-Mobile.
So many reasons to join T-Mobile. Find yours at T-Mobile.com.
Fastest based on analysis by Ookla speed test intelligence data of national speed score results incorporating 5G download and upload speeds for the first half of 2026.
Girl, let's get real. Some pads are just diapers with a good PR team, but not the new Kotex BioCare. That's because Kotex BioCare helps defend against odor and irritants. And it's the first and only pad with this pH proactive system that helps optimize the pad's pH. Just think of it as self-care for down there. Check out Kotex.com for more details on the all-new Kotex, completely redesigned to meet your needs. You asked, we heard.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
What you're listening to presumably doesn't suck, so neither should your sound system. Sonos lets you listen seamlessly from room to room. Same great sound, expertly tuned, astonishingly clear. It's not magic, but it's not not magic.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch, did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snap's Infinity Refresh!